on our speaker today is Jennifer Winter, who is the most recent recipient of the PHS Graduate Scholarship, and she's going to present some of the results of the work that she's been doing. Members will know that early in the existence of the PHS, we established a scholarship at the University of Calgary, and if I'm, it's been $1,000 quite some time, but I believe it's now going to bump it up.
Bumped it to 1500, so I hope you got 1500.
I don't know. Maybe the university is keeping it.
Jennifer received both her BA and MA in economics with first class honors from the University of Calgary in 2005 and 2007, respectively. And she's currently enrolled as a PhD candidate in economics and is studying the impact of political intervention on natural resource development. She's also a graduate fellow of the Institute for Advanced Policy Research, a public policy research institute established at UC in 2004. Her topic today is estimating the credibility of the CCF's threat to nationalize oil resources in Saskatchewan, 1944 to 64. Please welcome Jennifer Winter.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for inviting me to come and speak for you. I also want to thank the Petroleum History Society for funding the Petroleum History Society Graduate Scholarship at the University of Calgary. Wow, that's a mouthful. I am pleased to be this year's recipient. Every scholarship makes a difference to its recipient, and I am happy to see the Petroleum History Society making this possible. Scholarships provide additional support for students performing research, and this benefit should not be underestimated. As I was introduced, I'm a PhD candidate with the Department of Economics, and I'm currently in the third year of my studies. I have been working on my thesis for the past year. The overall theme of my dissertation is the effect of government policies on the development of natural resources. In particular, I'm interested in the effects of tax policy on companies involved in the extraction of exhaustible resources. Today, I would like to discuss the Cooperative Commonwealth Federation, the precursor to today's NDP. For brevity, I will refer to them as the CCF. I want to explore how their policies may have had an adverse effect on the development of Saskatchewan's natural resources. First, let me give you a brief history of the CCF. The CCF began as a political party in the early 1930s. Their policies were a response to the Great Depression. The party leaders believed that capitalism had failed and should be replaced with a social order based on economic equality. One of the central beliefs of the party platform was to ensure economic development was for the public good rather than for the benefit of individuals or companies. The party was initially federal and in 1934 formed a provincial party in Saskatchewan. The Saskatchewan CCF ran in the 1934 and 1938 provincial elections and was unsuccessful. However, they did manage to increase their share of the popular vote. The platform in these elections was based on social ownership. Industries essential to an economic planning were to be socialized to ensure development was for the public benefit. Tommy Douglas became the leader of the party in 1942 and in 1944 led the CCF to a landslide victory in Saskatchewan. Now, under the leadership of Tommy Douglas, the election platform became, to use the term loosely, less socialist than the official party platform. The CCF was to remain the government of Saskatchewan for 20 years. In 1961, the federal CCF became the NDP, and Tommy Douglas left to lead the federal party. The Saskatchewan CCF did not relabel itself until its defeat in the 1964 election. Now, let me explain why the CCF was thought to have an adverse effect on Saskatchewan's development. Once the CCF was elected, it embarked on an economic program initially favoring nationalization and public ownership of natural resources and key industries. The key industries they identified were the natural resource sector, banking and financial sector, and other industries essential for the operation of the province. The resources of the province were to be developed to benefit the citizens of Saskatchewan rather than external capitalists. In the fall 1944 legislative session, the government passed the Natural Resources Act and the Mineral Taxation Act. The Natural Resources Act empowered the Minister of Natural Resources. It gave him the ability to, and I quote, acquire any lands or works by purchase, lease, or expropriation as necessary to develop and utilize the resources of the province. This act gave the minister the means to expropriate assets related to the development of natural resources. The Mineral Taxation Act introduced taxes on developed and undeveloped mineral rights. Previously, mineral rights were not taxed in any form. Failure to pay the taxes introduced by the Mineral Taxation Act meant forfeiture of the mineral rights to the government. This was an attempt to induce owners of privately held mineral rights to allow the rights to revert to the province. The stated aim of this act was to compensate the people of Saskatchewan for the depletion of the alienated minerals. The Mineral Taxation Act effectively made it legal for the government to expropriate mineral rights once the taxes had not been paid. And by 1947, mineral rights in undeveloped areas had been seized by the government. So these two acts were key in setting the stage for the expropriation threat of the CCF government. However, the Mineral Taxation Act was not uncontested. The Canadian Pacific Railway owned mineral rights in Saskatchewan and began court action to have the Mineral Taxation Act declared beyond the powers of the government. The Court of the King's Bench found in favor of the government, and subsequent appeals by CP Rail brought the case to the Supreme Court of Canada and then to the Privy Council. This process took until 1953 to be resolved, when both parties agreed to discontinue. In September 1948, forfeiture proceedings were stopped pending resolution of the court case between CP Rail and the government. In 1950, the government allowed the return of mineral rights if the owed taxes were paid. By 1952, most of the mineral rights had been returned to the original owners. I would argue that the period 1944 to 1952 was a time in which the CCF government threatened and was successful in expropriating natural resources. There is some debate, however, on the effect this had on Saskatchewan's economy. Colin Thatcher, in his autobiography, states, "The CCF NDP has been a curse on the province of Saskatchewan and have unquestionably retarded our economic development, for which our grandchildren will pay." Now, these are very strong words. The idea behind this is that the socialist policies and threat of expropriation meant firms were less willing to invest in Saskatchewan. Less investment means slower development, even after an expropriation threat is gone. This is because there were lost opportunities during the threat period. Higher investment after the threat is gone cannot compensate for the lost opportunities for investment during the threat period. My research has been to test whether the expropriation threat slowed development in Saskatchewan. To do this, we need to find a measure of investment or interest in natural resources in Saskatchewan. I use the price paid for mineral rights. Now, suppose you are a firm interested in developing a natural resource such as oil. Your willingness to pay for the mineral rights is the expected future profits from the extraction of the oil. The ability of the CCF to expropriate without compensation would create uncertainty regarding future profits from developing your oil well. The change in the value of mineral rights depends on three things. Current extraction of oil reduces the amount that can be produced in the future and will lower future profits. Profits also depend on prices and costs which can change over time. Profitability also depends on whether your mineral rights will be expropriated in the future. How the value of mineral rights changed in response to the threat will depend on whether the threat was perceived as credible. I use the relationship between the value of mineral rights and the probability of expropriation occurring to estimate the perceived threat of the CCF. This is a perceived threat because firms had less information than the government on the likelihood of expropriation actually occurring. In order to determine the effect of the expropriation threat, I compare Saskatchewan to Alberta, where there was no expropriation threat. I use Alberta as a baseline because it is not sufficient to just examine Saskatchewan over time as there are potential long-term effects from the CCF policies. The data I have begins in 1947 and runs to 2006. My main data source is the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers, who conveniently have a substantial amount of information on their website in the statistical handbook. I have annual observations on the price per hectare paid for mineral rights in Alberta and Saskatchewan in $1947 dollars. The use of $1947 dollars means that I can control for inflation, so comparing the prices over time accounts for inflation. My strategy is to examine how the price paid changes over time and compare the CCF period to the last 50 years. Now, I've argued before that the threat period was 1944 to 1952. However, the data only begins in 1947, so I have to ignore the initial 3 years. So, the results are quite interesting. I find during the period 1947 to 1952, the value of mineral rights decreased in Saskatchewan. The average price per hectare was lower in Saskatchewan than Alberta, and also lower than the average price per hectare in Saskatchewan between 1947 and 2006. Furthermore, I also find aggregate expenditures on mineral rights were lower during the threat period. I find a perceived probability of expropriation of almost 50%. However, this number should be interpreted cautiously because it is based on a small amount of data. It is simply a preliminary result. I am hoping to get to extend my data set to 1944, perhaps even further back, if I can get cost information as well as information on the price paid prior to 1947, and that would greatly help my confidence in my estimate of the expropriation probability. After 1952, I find the growth rate in the price paid per hectare in Saskatchewan is higher than in Alberta. This suggests two things. First, that over the past 50 years, the growth rate in the value of mineral rights has been higher in Saskatchewan than in Alberta. So the value of mineral rights in Saskatchewan is becoming closer to the value of mineral rights in Alberta. The second point to note is that this suggests Saskatchewan is catching up, but it is not clear that the prices have equalized in the two provinces. I find that Saskatchewan has recovered from the policies of the CCF. However, given the duration of the recovery, it appears that the CCF policies regarding natural resources had lasting effects. This is due for opportunities for investment that were not taken because of the possibility of expropriation occurring. Given this result, we can conclude that government policies must be chosen carefully due to potential long-term effects. The Saskatchewan case of expropriation is somewhat extreme, but even taxes have the potential to negatively affect growth. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, I'm sure Jennifer would be willing to entertain a few questions on this.
Yes.
Jennifer, I'm curious, did you find a deviation in terms of the value? Because I would equate expropriation as part of the discount factor.
Right.
On the reserves. Mm-hmm. Did you find a deviation with short-term reserves, short-life reserves that would require less of a discounting risk versus long life reserves where the threat of expropriation might have a larger impact on the net amount recovered?
The data I used on reserves was just an aggregate measure in the provinces, so I can't say anything to that. If I had more information, I would be the happiest person in the world, honestly. Yes?
Yes, I'm interested in the period you quoted there from 47 to 52.
Yes.
You're aware of the fact that, I mean, I think what we have to keep in perspective here is the fact that the Duke, of course, came in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
In 1944, when the CCF came in, ESSO had already had 4 years of exploration history in Saskatchewan, where they had done a very fine program almost from the Manitoba border to the Alberta border, drilled 14 deep tests with very little encouragement. They had a little encouragement at Radville, where that was the well that tipped off the potash potential in Saskatchewan. Had a little oil show on what we call the Charles in the Mississippi. They drilled another well just a step out to the Mississippi because they thought maybe they had damaged the formation on the way down when they tested the deeper formation.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there was just a show there, and then they had a second test gas show in the Swift Current number one well. That was the only encouragement that they got from that entire program of 4 years. And then, of course, when the CCF came in with their socialistic policies, that was the final nail in the coffin for them. And they didn't return to Saskatchewan until, and this is where I'm interested in the period 47 to 52. Leduc came in 47. In 49, all of the southern part of the province from, say, well, basically the entire sedimentary basin area was under petroleum and natural gas permit with all the major, most of the majors represented except in ESSO. So by moving into Saskatchewan in 1949, the potential of the resource apparently was more important to them than the possibility of an expropriation. You know what I mean? Are you following me? Because I started my career with Petty Geophysical, and we were contracted to the Tidewater Group, who had three large permit areas. The first one extended from the U.S. border all the way to just south of Saskatoon. And then there were a B block in the central part and the Indian Head South area and in the southeastern part. And Mobile Woodley Group, they had a lot of southwest Saskatchewan. Which one am I missing here? The Sohio group, they had that large department. So they obviously couldn't have been too bothered about expropriation at that time. I submit that the major part of the differential in land prices, and I don't know, did you just deal with wildcat acreage or did you plug in leases as well?
Because the data is aggregate, I only have
the whole aggregate.
Yeah.
You see, we've got to remember that there's a lot of prime acreage in Alberta with respect to that Leduc play that would have had an impact on prices. I would say that would be a bigger impact than the political aspect of it.
Right.
Because, you know, Saskatchewan didn't have any real discoveries. They had, during my time with Petty, they had... The Dollard Field came in, which in southwestern Saskatchewan, which when they first discovered, backing up a bit, in those days we were looking for Middle East type production or the Leduc and so on. Well, Dollard wasn't a particular, it didn't flow well to the surface or anything, but it turned out to be one of the major producing fields in the province. Fosterton in the Swift Current area. And then, of course, Verdun and Manitoba. So there were much smaller discoveries, and you know, that didn't get the ink that Leduc did. So I'm just basically the bottom line of my story is that economics played a bigger role than policies at that time.
That's possible. I would argue that the Saskatchewan government was expropriating when the undeveloped mineral rights taxes were not paid. So that actually did occur, right? I don't think there was any dispute over paying taxes for developed mineral rights. Right?
I agree that those are all detriments. I'm just saying that the economic potential of the resource had a larger impact than policies.
My company, Continental Associates, was quite active in Saskatchewan in 44, 45, 46. We weren't worrying about the government. We met with them. We were happy with them. I think you've got to somehow couch your project in the price of oil. When I would find a gas well, the company would almost fire me because the price of gas was 10 cents. They said we bought all of them. Well, it was $3. It would affect everything.
As a supplementary to the two points that just been made, wasn't Mydale in 53? And that was the discovery that really turned attention back to Saskatchewan after the big easy plays in Alberta, the Duke, Redwater, Gold Spike, that whole list. From 47 to 51, you know, there was just this whole string of big successes in Alberta. And so then people started looking around, and Mydale brought the attention over to Saskatchewan. So 53 happens to be the year of your next data set.
Right.
So it's always problematic just looking at the math for the politics and economics around it.
Perhaps what you're dealing with is a micro view of a much larger picture. If you take the world as an example and look at the effect of a socialist government versus a capitalistic approach, you find that the effects, the macro effects on the economy of the nation as a whole are damaged because people are very reluctant to invest in a country that has a history of expropriations. The other more direct effect is on the petroleum, which you can view as a heritage resource, if you will, because it's the amount of oil in the ground has some relation to what you get to the surface. But very often, when you have a national oil company, or which is usually very inefficient and they tend to leave a lot of oil on the ground, or the national, world companies, when they get into a place that has a history of expropriation, they tend to produce just as fast as they can because they don't know how long it's going to be before they're taken out of the country again. So the damage to the resource of a socialistic government is much greater than is usually ever seen or discussed.
Any other comments? I would like to say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that I believe this recapture of mineral rights by provincial governments wasn't just in Saskatchewan. This is something that was going on in Alberta at the same time. In fact, the rights that Eric Harvey got for the foundation of his fortune and the Glenville Museum, ultimately, the rights that he picked up basically for his song, because they were going to be given back to the province because the railroad company that originally had those rights had not paid their mineral taxes. Mm-hmm. So that sort of, I don't think we'd call it expropriation, it's sort of a subtler form of repatriation of the rights. Mm-hmm. And it was certainly going on in Alberta. Mm-hmm. One other thing, too, just as a comment, I think we are seeing a similar situation in the contrast between Alberta and British Columbia today, where there's a very strong impact of the different resource endowments, in particular for unconventional resources in British Columbia, northeastern British Columbia, as opposed to Alberta. Okay, so good old Eddie Spellback is probably getting a bit of a bum rap with the decline in the Alberta industry relative to British Columbia, because I think a lot of that is being driven by the fact that a lot of these rich shale gas resources and so on are in British Columbia and not in Alberta. So despite the fact that he's tweaking the royalty structure, I'm sure that has a negative impact. Certainly the geology, the fundamental geology is different in the two areas as well. I think I would, Peter, you want to?
Yeah, just one comment. There's a sociological factor here too. On a number of occasions I've heard company president, one in particular I won't name, but refer to Saskatchewan as those communist bastards. And this was a great deal later than the period you're talking about. So the effect had a long-lasting impact in some sectors. People just couldn't get over it. I had very personal experience with that.
Which we have been a much longer enduring legacy of Saskatchewan government ownership of industries and all that sort of stuff. And, certainly even the conservative other governments have come in after the NDP and maintained that. I think they gradually privatized things, but still it's a much larger sector of Saskatchewan economy owned by the government and elsewhere.
Good. Okay, well, let's